So Congressman Peter Welch, of course, is a Democrat from Vermont, in office since 2007. Peter, let's talk a little bit about immigration. Obviously, this has now come to a head. It's quite crisis. You have a president of the United States who is obviously trying to play to his base by being anti-immigrant. What do you make of the whole thing?
Well, you analyzed it exactly right. I mean, towards the end of the election, President Trump made a political decision, and it was to use the immigration issue as an opportunity, as a way to try to get his base up, to make them very fearful that there was an invasion of this caravan, to send 5,000 troops down to the southern border, even though we have thousands of well-trained and very competent border officials there already. So this was a political decision by the president that he's made before. And he uses the caravan was, of course, he was trying to stoke fear in people's minds that people that the caravan was going to be coming to your city and your home very soon, in real exaggeration. And also, you know, he played up the wall that he's continuing to say he wants $35 billion for this wall that would go from sea to shining sea, even though many Republicans in Texas are opposed to it as ineffective and unrealistic. So I think it's unfortunate because we do need a comprehensive immigration bill. We need border security. And how do you do that? In some places, it's a physical barrier. Other places, it's technology. Other places, it's more boots on the ground. But we need an asylum process that is that works. We need more legal immigration and a faster process. And we need to help some of our in our agriculture sector to have a simple plan where, for instance, our dairy farmers are able to get access to the labor they need to milk the cows. So if we just sat down and talked about this as a problem to be solved as opposed to a political issue to make people fearful all the time, we could make progress. But it's pretty clear that this is the go-to issue for the president when he wants to whip up his base.
So let's go from there to the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, they've been trying to decapitate it for a long time. And I'm wondering what can be done, if anything, to protect it now that you're in control?
Well, I think the American people protected it because that was the big issue in this election. You know, the Republicans went from wanting to repeal the Affordable Care Act, including all of them signing on to a lawsuit to get rid of the protection for people having access to insurance, even if they have a pre-existing condition, to claiming that they supported pre-existing condition, even though they were against it. And the big issue Democrats ran on was essentially protecting the Affordable Care Act. And that was a winning issue for us, and it was a losing issue for the Republicans. And I think the fact that the Americans who voted as they did, that's the biggest protection. Now that we get back, I think the biggest thing that we can do as Democrats in the House is start focusing on the cost of health care. And it's why prescription drugs, which is the component of health care where it has the fastest rising cost, we've got to focus on that. And we need the president to lead on that. You know, he said a lot of the right things, that the pharma prices are a ripoff. They're not sustainable, and people are getting hammered. He said he's for price negotiation. He said he's for even safe importation. But we've got to bring those prices down. We need presidential leadership. If he's willing to act, I'm willing to work with him on that.
Do you believe him? I don't.
It's hard to know. You know, do I believe? Here's what I know. So this speaks for itself. When Elijah Cummings and I met with him in April of last year, he said all these things. And it's now November, a year later, and nothing's been done. So let's follow the let's see what he does as opposed to evaluate what he says.
Let's go from there to a related question, which is the opioids. I know that you're vitally concerned with this. Are we making any progress?
Modest progress. You know, we did have a bipartisan bill that put about $3 billion into opioid treatment, and that money will get back in many cases to our first responders. And it had a number of provisions that make minor reforms in how we prescribe and databases, and there were a number of provisions in that bill the president signed that were authored by me. So we made some progress. But bottom line, we need a much more ambitious focus. You know, a number of us have sponsored legislation that would really put $100 billion over 10 years into the opioid crisis. I mean, we're losing so many lives to opioids now, particularly in rural America. And it's something that knows no partisan boundaries. I mean, you know, whether you're a member of Congress representing a red district or a blue district, you're losing people. And again, I emphasize, especially in rural America. So I'd like to see us work much more with much more ambition on that. And that's one where it should be, must be, bipartisan.
You've been following this quite closely. The question that so many of us are asking is, why are people doing this to themselves?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. We did 8 opioid roundtables. And, you know, my conclusion is that a lot of it is it's a sign of hopelessness. You know, it's the hollowing out of our communities, mm-hmm. where there's not a lot of good job opportunities. The agriculture sector is under a lot of stress. Some of our local community institutions and even our small hospitals are under a lot of pressure. And it's an indication of loneliness and in some cases despair. So I think that ultimately, in addition to providing treatment to people who are suffering from this addiction, we've really got to rebuild our communities and have a rural America revitalization. I think that's got to be part of it. You know, people make these choices when it doesn't seem like there's other options. And it's tough on communities. It's tough on employers. But I don't fully understand it. But I think we've got to do all we can to challenge it.
I want to go one other place. So we only have a couple of minutes here. But you've got you and Bernie and establishment is pretty well Democratic, except that you elected a Republican governor. How come that happened in Vermont?
Well, Governor Scott is popular, and he's been, you know, an independent governor. He's fiscally responsible. He's socially liberal. It's consistent with the kind of profile that Vermonters have generally liked for governor. He has been critical of President Trump and remarks the president has made about Muslims, about Hispanics. So I think that the governor's approach here obviously was very much validated by Vermonters.
And that is in a blue year, he still managed to pull it through. And that did that surprise you? I mean, did you think it was coming?
I wasn't really surprised. You know, I mean, he had his opponent ran a spirited campaign, but I think Governor Scott, through his 2 years, and we only have 2-year terms, so there's an inclination, I think, on the part of Vermonters to give that governor another 2-year term for sure. But I think that his combination of keeping an eye on the checkbook, which Vermonters want governors to do, and him establishing his independence from, I think, the harsh rhetoric of President Trump, obviously served him well in this election.
We love talking to our very good friend, one of the smartest guys I know, Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont at large since in Vermont, the only congressman since 2007. Hey, Peter, can't wait till you come around the next time.
Same. I enjoy it as well, very, very much.